The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Anyway, we all know people who are just chilled, nothing can faze them, and others who panic at the mildest disturbance to the norm. So why are some people calm and others tense? Well, I'm joined by Stephanie Regan, clinical psychotherapist and co-host of the Tough Love podcast. Stephanie, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Why are people so different in their reaction to crisis, big or small?
Yes, crisis, big or small. I think now, obviously, this is a multifactorial kind of situation with people. So we're really kind of trying to shine a light on some of them, some of the factors. But definitely there is an innate or genetic factor. In other words, some people and people who have had numbers of children will know that one child comes out quite differently to the other. They are different from the beginning. You could say, is it to do with feeding? Is it to do with the fact that they are more comfortable physically? So some things begin well for babies and for mothers, you would say, and for, you know, caregivers. And you can have a very lovely, calm beginning, or you can have quite a kind of difficult beginning. That matters, I think, to the tension level. We also know that babies who are born early and who have a lot of intervention early, that can have consequence on levels, anxiety levels and predispositions.
Higher anxiety.
Yes, predispositions to different things. So it's really about, does it set you up well? Do you get set up well? So there are some factors in the very early years that are very important. One of them especially is if a child is exposed, let's say past babyhood now, you know, there's the mother baby or the caregiver baby interaction phase. There's the genetic factor. There is then the phase, if you like, where the child is sort of conscious enough of themselves to be looking out and seeing what the hell's going on out there. And it's at that phase that they begin to become very conscious of what is a threat and what is not, and what's chaos and what is not in the home.
But won't they simply observe the others around them, whether it's siblings or parents, and the way they handle things?
Yes. That's,
you know, if
a, that's
the phone,
a big factor.
The old days, a phone on the hall stand or something.
No, that's right.
And someone said, who in God's name is ringing me at this hour of the night?
You're right. There's a mimicking. There's an absorbing. But there is also the time, remember, when they're sort of undifferentiated from the parent. So they're really, you know, breathing it in, almost feeding it in. So there's that whole phase. So then there's a lot of research out there to tell us that people, when a child is exposed to a certain amount of resilience, because you're a certain amount of pressure or uncertainty, that it builds resilience. So people will often say, what doesn't kill you will make you stronger. Well, yeah, but not completely, because if it's overwhelming threat or chaos or chaos in the home, if it's overwhelming, it actually doesn't build resilience. It overwhelms the child and makes them more disposed to anxiety.
You've got a child in a home and at 9 o'clock at night, it's dark outside. Knock on the door.
Yes.
Everyone kind of...
Yes.
In a doctor's house where there'd be people knocking on the door day and night.
Indeed.
The child watching that would be chilled when there's a knock
on
the door.
Yes, it's what it means. I agree. So the mimicking of the parent matters, absolutely, and how they deal with things, how they do the modelling that you get there. But it isn't the whole story, I suppose. It's what the child thinks about what is happening that matters. I had a very interesting, sorry to digress slightly, but you mentioned knock on the door. And I think of a man I was dealing with who was about 50 years of age, massive levels of anxiety, and it transpired that he was always at home alone. Parents did go out drinking, and this is many years ago, and the knock-knock was exactly the thing that drove him, triggered him completely, because the one thing he was never allowed to do was open the door, and he would be home alone. So, you know, people have different lives. Yeah.
Now, what about mental health? I mean, people suffering from a particular condition.
Yes, exactly, because anxiety can be indicative of other kind of conditions, and it can be, as I say, the flip side of, or a component of other important things like depression, but they're not always connected, but they can be connected. So there can be the, you know, a sort of a raised generalized anxiety that would be a disorder, and social anxiety is another. So these are, you know, very open to treatment. And I suppose that's one of the reasons to mention it today. People often think that people are different, you know, and you can't do anything about it. That's the way you are. That's not the way you are. We all have a tendency to have things from our, you know, brought down hereditary in a hereditary kind of way to us, but actually it's our lifestyle and what we think and do that often activates those, and that's been very well shown in most, you know, even at the physiological level.
Now, you can have two sets of parents in the same street, and the kids of one set of parents are out until 8 o'clock at night playing football in the street, in spite of the fact that their car's going up and down, and the parents say, they'll be all right, sure, I played as a kid, and the other parents are terrified. either that they'll be knocked down or a child molester will jump out from behind a van and abduct their child. It's absolutely the same circumstance, but one is viewed very differently by
Each set of parents. So what our parents tell us matters, for sure. But it's also what we see them do, what we see others do. But remember, parents also leave children at risk and they leave them overexposed. They're not, you know, not all children have perfect parents. The other thing is that it's your mindset is a huge factor. People can learn coping strategies, and we know more now about what provokes anxiety, what keeps it going, what accelerates it, and what minimizes it. So there's a lot that people can do, because you're not going to be able to get away from that trigger response that we have to be a little bit stressed when something becomes uncertain. That's a kind of a get us on our toes bit. It's like coming in here today. I can't think quickly if I don't go a little bit on my toes, so to speak, mentally. So a little bit of that, you know, kind of ability to kind of, how would you say, perk up your sort of adrenaline levels is an important part, as we know, of performance in all sorts of areas. So there's lots of good things. We're not trying to knock it on its head, but we're trying to make it work for us. And if you're the kind of person who is always tense, you can really damage your performance. We know it's not good for you in a physical way. It has physical, absolute physical implications. And it's also very bad for your thinking, because if you stay in an anxious state, you become very narrow in the way that you think about things. It's very well shown that people who are anxious, they lose the facility to look left and right, so to speak, to broaden their perspective, to think of many other avenues. They're not in collaboration. They get stuck into one thing, and they can't offer any other suggestions. So you become quite narrow in your thinking and fixed and rigid. That's the word I'm looking
for. When you're anxious, I mean, say in this job, and we hot seat here, you know, someone steps out and I step in again.
Indeed.
And you're told you've got 90 seconds before you go on air. When you're totally in charge of everything, you know, everything's in order, that 90 seconds could be half an hour. You know, it's fine. If you're a bit stressed because
time goes,
things are
then.
Not, you, then you get flustered. And
Well, that's to do with the uncertainty factor.
Yeah.
So it's the uncertainty that makes your adrenaline shift. And as you say, you're super experienced at this. So if somebody said, Pat, we need you, you could walk in that door, put a piece of paper in front of you and begin. I can do that kind of thing now because I've been doing it a long time, like standing up to do a presentation or something. But it's the unknown factor that spikes your adrenaline when you don't know what's going to happen.
Can you train yourself to be calm?
Yes, because you can train yourself in many ways. You can do a lot of things to help. Training helps, remember, in jobs, first of all. So if you have the resources to feel in control, the more of that you do, the better. The other thing that you really can do to help is to practice staying in the moment. You know, in other words, we've learned an awful lot about not letting your thoughts fly forward or fly backwards. What will happen if it goes wrong? People keep thinking about that. What will happen? What else could go wrong? The lights could go. This could go. You know, so if you can interrupt your thought process and fix it in a particular way, that really helps, because we know that our thoughts accelerate down a particular path. So we know for sure that if you can interrupt it, and the way to interrupt it sometimes is just to start, for example, counting backwards. But I often do it in an interval of three instead of an interval of two, because we do that quite easily. You know, we think 2, 4, 6, but kind of start maybe at 99 and come back in threes and breathe deeply. We've learned a lot about breathing and how it will slow down your heart rate and how it will relax you. And it's a very simple thing of deep breathing.
A couple of questions, really. Mm-hmm. Can a cluttered and disorganized environment lead to anxiety in children?
Only if, you know, sometimes I've seen people who you would think that would provoke, you might provoke that in children, but actually it also can be fluid. So there can, as long as the mom or dad is comfortable in that, because I've worked with a few people who are very creative and I couldn't live in their home for 5 minutes, but they're creative and they do that. And I think one thing that I have seen happen is the children sometimes become the parent. They start looking for their own toys. They start trying to regulate themselves. They're checking if mom has forgot things. So that's a factor there.
Anxiety and mental health, doesn't it all come down to what you pay attention to that shapes you?
Well, exactly. So it's the internal talk and what you are paying attention to, that's a very good way of putting it, that shapes you, as shapes your response.
Another one says, people's reactions to crises are directly proportional to their sense of self-reliance. You're more likely to collapse if you think someone else has to pick you up. If you think your welfare is your own responsibility, you won't allow yourself to give up.
I wouldn't agree with that. I wouldn't consider that as correct, because we have a lot of research to show that if we had 20 people in a room and they were all faced with an overwhelming stress, every one of them would have PTSD symptoms.
I heard from my 11-year-old that her friend has watched Squid Games. I was really surprised knowing the parents. She had watched this when it came out 3 years ago when she was only 8. Surely this cannot be good.
I would agree. Not good. Not appropriate. It's a very... very adult concept, isn't it? And it's pretty horrific. Squid. So I watched it and regretted it.
Oh, really? Yeah, you
yes,
watched that.
I watched it just for interest. Yes.
Yeah, I'm just wondering. You know, when you were saying people should live in the moment and not think ahead. I mean, over the weekend, people might have been afraid that they'd have power cuts.
Yes.
But others would be chilled, saying, "Oh, sure, maybe the lights will go off." But the person who's afraid may well prepare and have bread in the fridge
exactly.
or whatever.
So this is the on your toes. I mean, I couldn't help thinking there of, I spend a lot of time up and down in Clifton. I'd like to give them a shout out today. I have family down in Clifton and they have not had power or phone or Wi-Fi or anything since 2 a.m. on Friday morning. So you're right about, you know, this the boiled water notice and it's going around by text, but nobody's getting the text. So they're in there's many areas of the country where people, you know, their preparedness is going to have really mattered. And so a little bit of anxiety at the right moment is a really important thing.
Stephanie, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much,
Stephanie
Pat.
Regan, clinical psychotherapist and co-host of the Tough Love podcast.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.